Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Jumping Monkeys would like to thank Cashfly for the bandwidth for this podcast. CACHEFLY.com. Cashfly.
This is Jumping Monkeys with Megan Maroney and Leo Laporte. Episode 36 for March 1st, 2008. Catherine Trueblood.
Jumping Monkeys is proudly brought to you by Audible.com for your free audiobook. Some great kids' books, too. Visit audible.com/monkeys. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. It's time for nothing.
It's time for nothing. It's time for a gray screen.
It's working.
Oh, good. Oh, good. All right.
Forget we said anything. Jumping Monkeys is on the air. I'm Leo Laporte.
And I'm Megan Maroney.
Da-da-da-da.
I have a bone to pick with you.
Oh, dear.
Or a question to ask you.
You're starting to sound like my wife.
Why am I getting spam that's addressed to Leo?
You're getting spam?
Yeah, like full on like spam.
Oh, I signed you up for that thing.
I think it must be like because I have the twit.tv address
probably.
And it's you, but it's like full on, you know, stocks, you know, penis enlargement, spam, the whole
Well, that's not spam.
Deal.
I asked for it. No, it says, Dear Leo.
Yeah, it says, Dear Leo.
Your penis is not big enough? So that's
sometimes
that's what it's saying. I must have a reputation. It must have my reputation precedes me.
I just like for the past few weeks I've been getting spam. Like some of it, you know, like I find in my spam in my junk
must
mailbox.
Must be because you're it's Megan at Twitter.
Yeah, that's
TV.
And they must know that you are like you own the you know
the other thing
domain.
That happens, which really annoys me, and I get a lot of bounce backs, is that spammers use at twit.tv. They use at yahoo.com.
Right.
They use well-known domain names
right.
in their return address
yeah.
so that people's spam filters perhaps will allow
right.
it. And it really annoys me. And the only reason I know that is because I get a lot of bounced back.
Yeah.
And it comes back to me. And I, you know, I mean, literally hundreds of messages a day. And that's been going on for a year or two.
Yeah.
Nothing I can do about it, folks. I don't send out spam, obviously.
Obviously. Yeah. Okay. Well, I just wanted to ask you about that.
You could just send anything you get
to you.
Over
I will.
To me. Yeah.
All right. So today we're going to talk to Catherine Trueblood. She's an author and
I love
a
that
professor.
Name.
Yeah, it's a great name. She wrote a novel called The Baby Lottery, which I think is just fantastic. And we're going to talk to her about the book, about promoting the book online. And yeah, it's just we're going to have a good chat with her.
A fun time.
I think.
Spend, save, give.
Right. Well, first, before we get to spend, save, give, I wanted to remind people of our phone number, which is 707-981-4602. We want to hear your voice.
We do.
We want you to call in.
We do. Please call. We don't have any today.
No, we don't have any today.
I used them all
we
up
used
last
them all
time.
Up.
So bad.
But we've had some great ones, and we love to hear your comments, negative or positive, anything you got to say.
I like
tricks.
The idea. My whole thinking is that this is a community. This is not a one-way street, us
right.
talking, you listening. It's everybody. It's a conversation.
Right.
And I love that. And, you know, on the blog, I just added video comments, which
I saw
is
that
so
with
fun.
Vimeo?
Vidler.
Vidler? Oh,
Vidler, yeah.
Yeah.
It's so fun because not as many people as I'd like use it, but
right.
to be able to see your readers and interact with them and
yeah.
like that, that's just wonderful.
That is the future, isn't it?
It is. I think so, yeah.
All right. So now we're ready for the spend, save, give.
Okay.
First is spend. Now, this is a little gift that my boys received for Christmas that I didn't realize how great it was until I found it.
I'm ready to type. My fingers are poised over the keyboard.
Oh, right, because you don't have the links.
I don't have the links today.
I can forward them to you.
No, it's better not.
Okay.
I like this.
Okay.
This makes me feel like one of the listeners.
Right, and I can say it slowly for you, too.
Yes.
These are Stomp Rockets at StompRocket.com.
My kids love
They've been around
Stomp Rockets.
For that long?
They're not that new.
They're not. They've been around
You thought you just discovered Stomp Rockets?
I just discovered Stomp Rockets, but I, you know, other people might not have discovered them. Now, did you make your own, or did you buy these? Stomp Rocket.
We bought them.
Stomp Rocket. .com with no
Stomp
S.
Stomp Rocket.
See, it is good that you're entering the Stomp
yeah.
Rocket.
From D&L Company Home. of the Stomp Rocket.
So are these the ones that you had? Did you make your own? They're like little foam rockets, and then you stomp on this little plastic balloon type thing, and the air whooshes through, and it goes poof.
It's a safe rocket.
Yeah, totally safe, unless you aim it right at someone's eye.
You'd have to really work to hurt somebody with these, which my child has.
But really?
But he hasn't succeeded, so there you go.
Lessons in physics this teaches you. It gets you outside. Totally fun. They can run after him. You know, it's fun.
And they're not expensive.
No, they're pretty cheap.
And they go surprisingly high.
Yeah, my recommendation would be to go ahead and get the extra package of Stomp Rocket. We have Stomp Rocket Junior for my 3-year-olds.
So the 3-year-olds get it.
Yeah, the Stomp Rocket Junior. Well, they don't. I mean, they don't know exactly what's happening.
They just know if they jump
understand.
On something, it goes.
Right. They don't say, "Ah, the physics principles at work." Now let's go
Father,
put something in the bathtub and study
that
more
line.
Physics.
We are getting leakage of the propellant. So it's $15 for 4 rockets and the stomper, and you can get more rockets for $5 for 3. And
yeah, we've lost ours over the fence, up in
Fun on the roof.
On the roof, yeah.
When we moved from our last house, we had so much stuff on the roof. There were foosballs and stomp rockets and frisbees.
How did you know that?
And kites. Well, you can kind of see it as we drove off. It was a fairly colorful roof. I said, wave goodbye to your toys, children. You've left them on the roof.
That's interesting because that's something you usually don't put in, like, the real estate. Everything's like, oh, you have to keep everything the way it was. But, like, do you have to remove everything from the roof when you leave?
I think you have to leave the roof broom clean.
Broom clean. Good question.
We had a low roof. You remember our old house on Eastman? It was a farmhouse. And so it was a single story and had a low, kind of flattish roof. It just was a magnet for stuff.
Right, yeah.
And we caught a lot of stuff. Yours, too, though. I could see you leaving stuff on the roof.
Yeah. Definitely.
That's a California thing. In New England, with houses that are like, across the street for 3 or 4 stories, you're not going to get something on that roof.
Right. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, it's true. All right. Now to the save.
Unless you really try hard.
Everyone who has Netflix and uses a PC knows that you can now, there's this watch instantly feature. Have you used that?
We watched Marnie the other night. Jennifer was reading an article, I think in Vanity Fair, about how Alfred Hitchcock was obsessed with Tippi Hedren. And throughout that entire movie, he harassed her. And finally, at the end of the movie, she got so fed up, she said, "I am not interested in you. Leave me alone." And Jennifer said, "Do you know Marnie?" I said, "Yeah, Sean Connery. It's a great movie. 60s, early 60s. Kind of not the best Hitchcock, but pretty good Hitchcock. I want to see it." "Oh, well, we don't have it." "Wait a minute," I thought. "Netflix." And it is. You can stream it on Netflix.
And
we were able to watch it right away.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
That's a nice thing. Now, it doesn't work too well on a Mac. And I was trying to do it on a Mac with Windows. Because you can't use the Mac. You have to use Windows.
Right, yeah.
With Windows emulation. And it's just a little slow.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, you could do it.
Right. And then, soon with the Mac, you'll be able to buy rent movie rentals.
Netflix says they're going to support the Mac soon.
Yeah.
Now, not every movie's available to stream, but a lot of them.
No, yeah, there are a lot. But the reason why I mention this on this podcast is that I've noticed that there aren't a lot of children's movies. And I think that maybe that's because they're afraid parents will just sit their kids in front of their computer and suck up all the bandwidth.
You're right.
But I have found a few, and I wanted to encourage people to email me ones they've found on Netflix, if they're Netflix watchers. The two that we like to watch right now are Annie. Which
the sun will come out tomorrow. Which Annie is it?
It's the movie version with Carol Burnett.
That's such a good Annie.
Yeah, it is good. It is a little bit scary for the kids, for my kids.
No, they're pretty little,
They're afraid of Miss Hannigan, but they like it. And
it's a hard knock life. For us.
It's a hard knock life for us.
I love that.
Okay, I'm not going to sing anymore because I'm horrible.
You're good. I thought that was quite well done.
Well, thank you. A lot of practice on the soundtrack of Annie. I'll tell you, a lot of practice.
Yeah.
But I'll put these links in the show notes. The other one is The March of the Penguins. Also, you can watch that anytime, which is also good for the kids. Although, a little bit scary and sad. There's some death in The March of the Penguins, but still good. Great kids movie.
I loved March of the Penguins.
Yeah.
That's the real life documentary, right?
Yes. Yeah. With Morgan Freeman narrating.
Not Happy Feet.
No, no.
That's different Penguins.
No, I didn't see Happy Feet on there. I've seen almost no animated. There's a lot of animated movies, but things I've never heard of.
Yeah.
No, but like there is a kids and family section, but it's not even it's not even linked from the front Netflix browse instant page.
Really?
Yeah, it's interesting. So if you have any that you found that you recommend that you can see on Netflix for free.
I think you hit the nail on the head.
Email
I think
me.
They don't want parents to sit their kids in front of Netflix and just keep playing
right.
stuff.
Yeah. So
they have a lot
me.
Of comedies.
Yes.
So, you know, I like my kids to watch comedies.
Right. Yeah. I mean, for older kids, there's some good stuff.
That's true. This wouldn't work for a 3-year-old.
This also isn't for kids, but I've noticed that This American Life, the Showtime special, is now on, too.
It's on here?
Yeah. And you can't even rent it yet, but it's there first.
Oh.
That was the first time I saw that on Netflix. It says play, but it doesn't say, you know, you can save it onto your Netflix.
I didn't know they were
game.
Doing stuff before DVD.
Yeah, it was interesting. They must have made some deal.
That's great.
Yeah, I've seen several of them, but I had, like, my parents, we don't have TV reception, so my parents TiVo'd them, and then we went over
I haven't seen them, yeah. So I'm,
they're pretty good.
I love the audio version.
Yeah.
Here's The Gods Must Be Crazy, part two. Ghostbusters, that's scary.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
When your kids get a little older, they'll like that. The idea that you could just play these. Now, the quality isn't full quality, but it's good enough.
Yeah, I think it's good enough.
Short
Circuit,
they'd like
that. You can attach it to your TV. And Short Circuit might be a good one. I don't know. That might be still a little bit too old for my kids.
Yeah.
But email me
a little older.
With some recommendations. So we'll compile some. Megan@twit.tv.
Good streaming kids movies from Netflix.
Yes, that's what we want.
Cat Baloo.
All right, now to the give section. This recommendation comes from Sarah. And it is a CD called Lullabies from the Axis of Evil. So just search on Amazon. That's probably the best way to find it.
What does that mean?
This is a CD. It features artists from the so-called Axis of Evil countries singing traditional lullabies from those countries, paired with Western artists singing translations. It's really well arranged, Sarah said. And
so it's
enjoyable.
A way of kind of bringing us together.
Yeah. Yeah, lullabies from the Axis of Evil.
Just because they're from the Axis of Evil doesn't mean their kids are evil.
And we're not even sure they really are from the Axis of Evil.
They may not even be evil.
The so-called Axis of Evil.
So who is that? That's Iraq, Iran, Korea?
Korea, yeah. That's the Axis.
That's it right there?
I think so, yeah. But
let me see if you can
they're...
download it from me. I could play a little bit of it.
Yeah, I'm sure I can play a sample.
Yeah,
is there like Twinkle Twinkle Little Star?
It is not a downloadable. You have to buy the CD. And I don't know if they provide.
They don't. There's no
sample.
Yeah, there's some samples.
Sad Soul did it. But see, none of these songs you would know.
Well, try one.
How about,
let's see.
Let me look here. Peace Song, Stars Are Rising. Everybody loves this one. La 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 go hi la le.
Yeah, that was a favorite even when I was a child.
Nami Yola Aubi.
Try one.
I don't.
Just pick one.
I just, for some reason, I want to hear this one.
Okay.
Of course, I don't have anything that will play it because we're on a Macintosh. Let's see if this will play.
I'm not on a Macintosh, but
I can
you can't
it.
Hear
I
it
can
for
play
me.
It. Here we go. This is inaudible. Oh, boy. That'll put him right out.
Well, Sarah says... Her quote was, how many times can you really listen to Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star without a trip to the psych ward? This is just giving, something different. And the reason why it's in the give section is here's the reason.
Yeah, this is nice. This is the peace song. Hey, you want to hear Ricky Lee Jones?
Yeah, I do.
I didn't know she
was. Who was that?
This. You don't know?
It is Western. No, who was that? There was just singing. I know who Ricky
that
Lee
was
Jones
Lila. No, that was the peace song. It was Savara Nazar Khan.
Oh.
This is Ricky Lee Jones. Gariba. Garibe. Ricky Lee Jones, as you've never heard it before. I don't think that's Ricky Lee Jones.
You don't?
So maybe that's they have the original artist, and then Ricky Lee will come in and sing. Chucky.
Oh yeah, then the Western artist sings the translation.
Later. Yeah,
yeah.
I think this is a great way of bringing the worlds together.
And 10% of the profits go to Worldview Rights, which describes itself as an organization for promotion of human rights, democracy, and conflict resolution using communication strategies and applications.
I'm not sure these are lullabies.
Well, what is, I mean, I don't know. I think it's great to expose babies and kids to international music.
World music, you bet.
World music, yes. So I will link to that. And there's also a Washington Post article about the lullabies from the Excess of Evil that I will link to.
The singers were recorded a cappella. And then they had jazz, Western jazz artists perform behind the recordings. So it's an interesting mix.
Yeah.
And by the way, if the interesting mix reviews on Amazon, some people love it.
And some people
say disappointing or exploitative.
Exploitative.
Well, because it's jazz influenced accompanist and English vocals added later, detracting from the ethnic appeal of the singing.
Huh.
I don't think that. I mean, that makes it more accessible, probably.
Yeah.
Anyway, good choice. Thank you. And who sent that?
Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah.
Sarah just had a baby, too.
Oh,
baby Elena Marie in December.
Congratulations.
And she also says Jumpy Monkeys entertained her through many late night feedings.
Oh, good.
Great time to listen.
It is.
Yep. While you're up in the middle of the night.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Feeding. Mm-hmm.
Do you wish to talk to Catherine first, or do you want to do an Audible pick? What do you want to do next?
Let's talk to Catherine.
All right.
Catherine Trueblood is the author of The Baby Lottery, and she's also assistant professor of English, and she's going to tell us about how she promotes her book online.
Is this your first novel?
It's my first novel, but it's my second book, and my first book, The Sperm Donor's Daughter, is anchored by a novella of 105 pages, and so it feels a little bit like a novel, but this is truly the first novel, yes.
Yeah, and so, but you're published by a legitimate big publishing company. This isn't self-published by any means.
Oh, no. Permanent Press is an independent publisher. They've been going about 27 years, I believe, in New York, and they've won the Literary Marketplace Editorial Award. But they are an independent. They're not owned by a large conglomerate, so they're sort of a maverick press still.
Well, but the reason I bring it up is so that people don't think, oh, you know, she's self-published, so she has to promote her own stuff, because I have to tell you, as a published author myself, you still have to promote your own stuff. I mean, you can be with the biggest publisher in the world, and even if you're, except if you're Danielle Steele, maybe, you really do have to promote your own stuff. But the internet provides such a wonderful opportunity to do that.
It does. Actually, I was talking to a publicist when I was at the Pacific Northwest Booksellers Association conference. I went there sort of as a featured author, and he said, for the first time in history, really it's possible to create the groundswell, you know, from the bottom up rather than top down. And
that's a good thing.
It's a good thing.
Yeah.
We don't have the same sort of gatekeepers of taste. I think that whole idea is something that people are rejecting, that other people become the arbiters of taste. And, you know, you can still argue that as certain websites become known for being interesting, stimulating, having fair-minded reviews, etc., they also, you know, become popular, and that is them. But the idea is that it really does come from the groundswell of readers reading rather than from people deciding what is good for people to read.
A lot of novelists say people don't read anymore, and they're frustrated by that, but you've not found that to be the case.
I'm kind of a diehard optimist. When you look at it, there are over 300 MFA programs in the country. You know, 1950, there were three, I think.
Wow.
This indicates to me something about...
Well, there's more writers.
There are more writers, and some people say, well, it's a celebrity mentality. But I think there are a lot more readers of literary fiction as a result of those programs. I don't think people are just narcissists. They read all kinds of work. In my experience teaching in a creative writing program, they're coming in thinking about all kinds of things that other people are doing and models and... So, you know, we may always be a small tribe, but we're a thriving tribe. That's my view.
And thank goodness for the readers. That's all
That's
I can
right.
say. If it weren't for readers, I don't know what this country would or this world would come to.
And, you know, and one of the things about setting up a blog tour, you know, I came from a traditional publicity past, and I even worked at Random House, so that's how I learned how to do it. And so my first book was a whole different picture from my second book. But with the baby lottery, it's been so wonderful to get letters from people, to have people who've been stirred by the book in some way, or particularly women who say, hey, this reflects the world I live in a way that chick lit doesn't, or this feels authentic to the kinds of trials that I face as a working parent. So that I've been particularly moved by.
You say that on the webpage, this ain't chick lit.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Well, you don't say this ain't. You say this isn't, but I say.
No. right. Well, because I have concerns. You know, I write counter to the prevailing trends in a way because chick lit originally was marketed as a subgenre of romance. And my concern is that it's become a way that we think about all of women's literature.
Terrible.
And I feel that real voices of social protest are underrepresented.
Yeah.
So, you know, my book, there's a lot of social protest and a lot of looking at the unfinished business of, you know, the 70s feminist agenda. You know, it didn't get realized. Gals, guys. And so people live under tremendous, I think, inhumane pressures.
Yes.
Yes,
I think that's true. So it's interesting. So you were at Random House working in publicity. You know about this whole process.
Oh, yes, I do. And I was a reviewer for a while. I reviewed for Publishers Weekly.
Uh-huh.
I still write reviews, but that was, you know, that was in New York. And then I came back to the West Coast. I'm originally a Westerner. But I learned how to put together the press kit and how to do all those things, which came in very handy. You know, I sent out about 250 of my own press kits with my first book. But it was still very much the typical, you send out, you know, your materials to the newspapers. You get your booking dates with the bookstores. You let people know when you're going to come into town, and you try to tie in with radio and print reviews. And I was able to do that very successfully with The Sperm Donor's Daughter, so I was thrilled. But I had to reexamine that route this time. I chose to do all big independent, I chose to do all the Western book fairs I could do. That was a different, and then I thought, and then I'm going to see what happens on the internet.
Interesting.
Yeah. And because I'm writing about a particular age and time in people's lives, i.e. people have careers and they have children, right? They don't get out much.
Mm-hmm.
But I am telling you, they are on the web.
They don't get out much. They're on the web. All right, there we go.
They are. You know, it's late at night. They want some company. They want some intellectual stimulation.
Yeah.
They want to have a conversation. There, I started out, but I found a lot of different, you know, I found the webzines I really admire, Literary Mama and Mama Zine and some of those. And then I just sort of began surfing sideways into all these blog neighborhoods. But Mother Talk, for instance, has over 700 blogs registered. So these are all people who want to talk about various aspects of trying to combine a life of parenting and all kinds of other things.
Well, also, it's more than that, because anybody who reads is probably also reading blogs online, right?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, it's reading.
It is reading. Yes, it is reading.
Is it a different kind of person, you think? I know. Well, I should say that my wife is not reading blogs. She probably reads a book a day.
Right.
But she doesn't read blogs.
Yes, I think there's a different kind of reading.
Yeah.
But I do think that the internet it has replaced the journal in a sense, which is, you know, in 19th century you talked about a man or woman of letters, and they wrote a lot of correspondence, right, and reviews. Well, now I think people write a lot on the internet.
If Samuel Pepys were alive today, he'd have a blog.
That's it, exactly. Yeah, the great huge correspondence of, you know, Nabokov. Well, now it would be, you know, a blog.
Just as self-absorbed, just as narcissistic, but now online.
Exactly. I'm not one of those people who cries that everything is, I just think they're new forms of the same discourse.
Well, and it's absolutely true. I mean, it's like, you think about people who sit in front of the computer screen all day and they, you know, you think, well, they're nerdy or they're antisocial, but that may be true, but
she's looking at me when she says that.
You can tell.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's why there's so many moms online, because you know you're exhausted. You can't, you know, you don't want to get dressed up. I mean, Michael Chabon is one of my favorite authors.
Love
he was reading at a bookstore that is literally 3-block walk from my house, and I wanted to go, but I just was exhausted. And then it was like, well, do I get to go? And my husband? Do we have to pay a babysitter? Is it worth it? No, it's not. I mean, and that's just like, I you know, that, and that's why a lot of these sites were born, I think, because people know that moms are not going to go out to read, so they have to have some other way to find out about new authors and books.
Yeah, logistically, but there are also larger issues about review space in general, and I think that reviewing has moved in a healthy way to the internet, because when you look at the number of books published, and I think it's
hundreds of thousands, 170,000.
And I think you have to subtract 30 or 40 if you're subtracting books that are DIY or print on demand only.
Okay.
So, but even at that point, over 100,000. And a lot of books that merit review space don't get it.
Right.
And I think that it's very wonderful. You know, there's a little book that I like. I'm trying to, which would be good if I could remember the title of it. The author is Zaid. It's called So Many Books. It's Mexican author Zaid. So Many Books. And one of the things he says is that a book simply has to exist within a constellation, right? The minute it finds the constellation it belongs to, you know, it's got it has its audience. But a book in the wrong hands is simply a piece of trash. And that's true. Mm-hmm. You know, if you spend a little time in an editor's office or an agent's office, or, you know, go down to your local newspaper where they have so few reviews for the number of books that they serve. And so I think that what's wonderful about the web is that it's made the opportunity for a book to find its neighborhood and find its constellation.
Let me try something out on you, because this is a concept I've been thinking a lot about lately, and I've applied it to podcasters and people who create web content. But I think it probably applies to authors, too, that podcasters and bloggers shouldn't think of themselves as creating a blog or a podcast. They should think of themselves as creating a community. And this is maybe the central creative act within that community. But what you're really trying to do is build a community around that. Mm-hmm. And I suppose, in a way, an author who, now traditionally an author doesn't think that way. The author says, I have something to say, mm-hmm. and says it. But I think nowadays maybe an author should think that way too. Does that make sense?
That's what I look for. When I found Megan's website, I certainly said, here's a lady who doesn't shy away from political content. You know, mm-hmm. So I was pleased. But I you know, you come to that person by way of what? Six other neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
It's true for a blog, but is it true now? What I'm trying to get at is, is there a new way of marketing books or a new way of thinking about books that can involve that can have that?
You mean as a writer conceiving of a book?
Well, not necessarily. No, obviously not. A writer has to write the book that the writer has to write. But having written, the writer or any creator, a musician, anybody who's creating has to now deal with, okay. Because I tell you, a record label doesn't promote you any more than the book publisher promotes.
No, it doesn't. And I think always, you know, the indie movement, whether you're talking about grunge or, you know, the early consignment presses of, you know, in Paris in the 40s, that they do find a kind of niche that they belong to and just keep going.
Right. And so now you have this opportunity to reach this niche and go to it. And cultivate it and create this community around yourself. And that's basically, to me, what marketing is about nowadays.
Well, here's the story. I mean, I'm thinking about starting a Northwest Book Review, all right? And I'm talking to a lot of friends about how we would do it and whether it would be on the web and web only or print and web or what. And I was looking at Poetry Daily, right? They post a new poem every single day. I don't know who this group of people that does this.
That's neat.
It really is neat. It has tremendous power and regard among poets. And it's funny, a friend of mine who had a new book of poetry out, Nancy Pegg, and the next thing she knew, one of her poems had been quoted in Oprah Magazine and placed on the Oprah Magazine calendar.
Okay, well, if you can make Oprah your community, you got it made.
But I'm saying, she didn't start out there. She went on, she got on Poetry Daily. Poetry Daily is a group of people, I don't know who they are, but they suddenly have tremendous power because now the entire poetry community goes every day to see, hey, what's new at Poetry Daily? So it becomes kind of your pulse and your way of being part of a cultural conversation. That's what books really are a cultural conversation, and I think this just makes it so much more immediate.
And it's never a general conversation. It'd be nice if it were, but it's usually a conversation among people of like-minded people.
Yes.
I mean, ultimately, you'd love to break out into, you know, everybody.
Well, you find their pockets. My book, for instance, deals with... has a part of it that's historical, which has to do with the clergymen on campuses prior to the legalization of abortion, prior to Roe v. Wade. People don't know that the campus clergy often became part of the abortion underground because they were so sad to see girls who were dying, bleeding to death on buses, etc. So they became part of that. I wrote that. Someone found me on the web who works for, there's actually a national organization, a religious organization for clergy who counsel for abortion, and they contacted me.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of thing would not have happened. I just think it's also that sense of, you know, your book is out there taking a walk all day while you're doing other things.
I love it.
You know?
I love it.
And my book came across, somebody else came across it, and then they said, oh, this is wonderful. We're really interested in this, too. And I did an interview with them. So these are, you know, I'm not only am able to find more things, but things find me. And so I find that aspect of it really heartening, you know.
That's a really neat way. I just think that's a wonderful way to think about what you're doing, is it's out there taking a walk all day. I really like that.
Yeah. Well, it is a little bit like space, too, though. You know, the more you go out into it, the more there is of it. You know, I mean, you must find that, too, Megan, with your, I mean, how much time you put into blogging, right? Mm-hmm. And how many things come to you to review.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It definitely is the kind of the same. You don't really, I mean, it's the idea you don't really know. Anyone could read it. I mean, maybe someday nobody does, but, you know, some days people you wouldn't even expect to would read it.
Mm-hmm. You and I talked, I remember you and I talked, May and I talked a little bit. I was concerned when I went to Mother Talk because I saw that the major publishing houses are now using, and they're smart. These gals who run it have posting themselves as web publicists, right? Mm. And I thought for a few minutes there that I could afford it. I had a delusion. They offer 10 blogs, a 10 blog tour for $1,000.
What's a blog tour? You better explain that. And that's okay. A lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's for something you could probably do.
And I thought all this was founded on the, you know, do-it-yourself spirit here. So, yeah, so I said, well, thank you very much, but I might try to come in through the back door. And anyway, it was funny. I noticed they've changed their site so that it's harder.
Oh, they don't have the, yeah.
To find, yeah, all the blogs.
Well, do you get approached by Mother Talk, Megan? I mean, is that somebody you...
I did, yeah. I did write some reviews for them, but then, you know, it's like you're just kind of trying this stuff out. And I, you know, I realized once I got involved was that it really is sort of a, you know, they end up paying their reviewers.
Is it like pay for post, kind of?
It's not like, it's similar to that. I just, I don't do it anymore because it turned out not to be something that I believed in because I just felt like... And also, especially after I talked to Catherine, too, it was interesting. I had really no idea that they were charging writers so much. And then, it just, I don't know. It's, they have these blog tours where they send the book to people. And then sometimes they also give them like a, you know, $10 gift certificate or something
much.
Like that.
They disclose it too. I received $20. They always disclose it. So
yeah.
It's
above
board.
Yeah.
So let me understand because I'm not understanding. So, as an author, you go to these people and they say, okay, we're going to arrange a blog tour, or you could do this yourself. But let's say initially this is how Mother Talk does
it.
Okay, great. And they identify 10 blogs that they think would be appropriate to write about your book.
Yes.
And they send your book to those blogs and a gift certificate, which is weird, but okay. And then they say, would you like to write about this?
Right.
And I don't know if they have to send until they have actually secured 10 coverage with 10 blogs, so they may have to send to 20.
Yeah,
for all we know. Uh-huh. But they try to make a good matchup. And you know, the interesting thing though, as you're going through this, is that the major publishers, right, particularly with Chick Lit books, the major publishers have found this.
I figured they'd do it. Yeah.
Of course, because for them that $1,000 is just poker chips.
Yeah.
Nothing. Right. But for the individual. with an independent press, it's prohibitive.
That's your whole advance right there.
But, yeah, right, exactly. But, you know, I just thought, well, on I go, and, you know, this serves as a marvelous resource, and I know how to do this myself. You know, you could create the equivalent of a press release, but I call it a web release. Some people call it an excerpt online.
So tell us what you do, because I think people would like to know.
Well, you create a one-page piece about your book. You're trying to contextualize the book, invite somebody in, show that it's gotten good reviews. I had a great review from Library Journal I put up there, another one from the Seattle, I can't remember if it's the Seattle Times or Post Intelligence, they both were good. So I put some reviews, excerpts up there. I put the cover of the book up in the top and my picture in the bottom and a two-line bio. And then I included a short email. You know, I sent it as an attachment saying, here's my web excerpt, and, you know, I appreciate the content of your website or webzine, and I always said why, so that they knew that I...
You really read it, yeah.
Yeah, I really read it and had some intelligence in choosing them. And then I said, if you'd like the book, I'd be happy to send it to you. And, of course, I always included the link to my website. And then I found this has been wonderful. My website, I have included, a zip drive publicity kit that has my photo and materials about the book, and the book covers on there, the TIFF files or JPEG
files. I'm looking at it right now, yeah.
Yeah, and so what I found is that people just take those and use them, when they, and it's great.
Sure. If I were going to do a blog post, I'd be thrilled. You gave me, oh, good. You gave me the cover. You gave me a great picture of you. This is great. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I tried to do. I tried to make it as professional as possible and everything that you need. And then
I had no idea this was going on.
Yeah. Well, I found out about it from, I read all the different, as much as I can about publishing, because that's my background. So I found a letter, a piece about it in the Publishers Marketing Association newsletter and the Authors Guild. Yeah. They both wrote about how to do a web tour. I said, okay. And so did Poets and Writers Magazine. So I read everything I could find, and then I did it my way, and it's working.
And Megan, as a recipient, so do you get a lot of these?
Do I get a lot of books?
These solicitations, these blog
Yeah, from...
So as a blog author, do you, what do you do? Do you look at them?
Yeah. Well, I mean, with Catherine's book, I was interested in reading it. So, you know, we emailed back and forth and she sent it to me and I read it. I mean,
so
it
you don't send
like,
the book right away, Catherine. That's too expensive.
No. I ask. I want to be sure that somebody really wants it. This is hand to hand. And Megan wrote the most glorious review that I love. So.
And she didn't pay me.
I did not. No, my publisher sent it to everyone he knew. So, yeah, it's been fun.
That's neat.
But,
that's really
neat. I mean, I enjoy working directly with the author and, you know, just in without the money changing hands. That was what I didn't like with these other places, that it just felt like it wasn't, even though, like, the publisher wasn't paying me directly, I think it didn't seem right, because the publisher, once I found out that the publisher was paying and then they were paying me, it just didn't, you know, it's...
Well, the whole idea of it, when I talked about being from the ground up, is that the internet has leveled the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
And then when this starts happening where you have, and I understand that, I think in some ways it's savvy, right? Because we have publicists who are for hire in the world. But again, it's not a level playing field, because I can't hire a publicist, but I can be my own publicist pretty effectively. So I don't think that those doors are closing by any means, but I think that people will start to see WebTalk as, because it is doing, if you look at them, they're starting to do more and more commercial books, because the publishers are approaching them with a lot of stuff and are willing to pay for them to do those publicity blog tours.
But that's, see, when I talk about community, I think that there is, that there's a positive, but there's also a negative. The community kind of rejects any attempt to game it.
Right.
It feels like, gee, that's not quite right. And so I think, Megan, your reaction is natural. It's like, don't game me. I want a legitimate, real experience with the author. I don't want some intermediary.
Well, it's like when Barnes & Noble's staff picks weren't really picked by the staff. You
right.
know?
Exactly. Yeah. People sense that. I think they really, people have a pretty good radar for that kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens. It's interesting, you know, to be watching. I was kind of... Yeah, I shocked when I thought, oh, now they're paid publicists online. So.
Well, but and I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter. You could do it yourself, or you could pay somebody to do it. But Megan, you liked the idea that it was somebody who was the actual author was contacting.
I did,
you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you could have this communication with her. And it's interesting. Yeah, yeah. This is a whole new way of operating. I love it. It is grassroots.
You can stay home in your slippers.
Yes.
It's publicity in your slippers, which nothing else offers you. So, you know, I came in from, I did a 9-month tour and 3 book festivals. So, you know, and it was when I was finished with all of that that I sat down to do the blog tour. And, you know, the part of it being at home has been, you know, it's very wonderful, because you know, you can only be on the road for so long.
Now I'm going to say something really sexist.
Oh, no.
I'd like to warn you. Get your tomatoes ready. No,
right.
It's not a bad thing, but it's interesting. I suspect that it's in the mothers or women's group blog community that this started first. This is not something I've seen before, and I don't know if other blog communities, this is the kind. I mean, I've never seen, for instance, the guy who wrote the book on Pearl going to the other tech sites saying, oh, you want to, hey. Because guys aren't that way, but I think women are a little bit better at that kind of communication, and it might be that this has started in this particular community first. I haven't seen it anywhere else.
Well, it started with a political movement. The
political
movement is Moms Rising, which was the bill with 6 points that went to Congress last year and came out of Washington State originally. And so I found this whole movement by finding Moms Rising, because other women that I knew who were like-minded socially and politically told me about it. And then, so I think part of it, too, is that if men... felt the way that women do, or felt the brunt of what happens when you have a child and try to remain in the workforce, that there would be a whole lot more talking going on.
Interesting. Of course, we've talked about Moms Rising on the show.
Yeah, we interviewed Joan Blades on the show, and that was...
Terrific.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, she's the one who... That sort of, for me, was that was the epicenter from which everything else, you know, enlarged. So.
But again, it's females, not men. Maybe you're right. Maybe if men were staying at
home. I don't know. Aren't there just as many sites about, guys who like snowboarding, for instance?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. If I wrote a snowboard magazine or a snowboard book.
I think you'd find a whole giant neighborhood of guys
maybe
out there who want to, you know.
I wonder if they're doing that yet,
Yeah, I think the unique thing is that women read more than men. And
yes, they do.
Women are, you know, stay. I think because women are mothers are staying home more than men, I think.
But I do think this is a precursor. I think that this is going to start. This is the beginning, but I think it will spread everywhere. I mean, this is the way things ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we call disintermediation. It's the elimination of the middleman or middlewoman, where you go, the author goes right to the blogger. There's a community, and you talk right to the community.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do it through a third person.
Well, it's been great. Working the other way, when I have an article for Poets and Writers Magazine, which is coming out in March on three Western book festivals, and I wanted to talk to Jess Walter, the author of The Zero. So I went to his website first.
Right.
Yeah,
perfect.
And then found him, and then he called me up, and then I put him, you know, it was wonderful to be able to just know, okay, I want to find Jess Walter, you know, that.
That's how it ought to be.
Kind of ability. You know, if somebody wants to email you, and then they say, hey, I'd like to interview you. I mean, yes. You know, you have to, you got all that trash in your email, too, for, you know, whatever, penis extenders and things like that. So, you know,
well, if you're in the penis extender community, that's different. But that's the point. That's why it's a community.
Why do I need a penis extender? You know, I've got an imagination. Anyway.
That's why, though, it's a community and that you stick to the community. Because if you approach somebody outside of the community, it's a little harder. It's a little bit, you know, an uninformed approach.
Right.
It becomes spam. I mean, that's what spam is
exactly.
Inappropriate. Approaches.
Right, right. It's not. It has not found its constellation.
It's out of
not
context.
Belongs to anything else.
Yeah,
that's it. Exactly.
And if it's in context, it may not be considered spam. You know,
I think I would say it'd be very interesting for you, Leo, to take. I have not had the time to research it on the man's side, but I do know from teaching. I've taught classes in book review before with graduate students, and they come in and they have found all kinds of new book reviews and book review sources and journals that book review. I mean, that whole McSweeney's movement, is another huge neighborhood of people who are interested in the literary essay and the book review, and it's thriving. You know, so that's another example where you think, who would have thought that a whole new source for literary essay would crop up? But it did.
That's actually a very good point. I'm going to take it back. It was stupid and sexist.
because we triumphed.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Listen, it's really been a pleasure to be a part of this conversation. Thank you.
Oh, it's great. And we'll talk again soon, I hope. Good luck.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Kate Trueblood. And her book is
The Baby Lottery.
I liked her. I thought she was really
good. That was a fun conversation.
Yeah.
It really was. Lots of new ways to promote all your things.
I have
these
to say,
days.
It's been fun doing this show because we reach a whole different group of people that I wouldn't normally necessarily talk to.
But I
love this the community that the not necessarily techies anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're creators. They're talent.
Right. Yeah.
They're writers. They're thinkers who are technical enough to do a blog. To do internet stuff, but aren't necessarily geeks.
Yeah.
And so we're meeting a really neat mix of people, which I'm really enjoying.
It is interesting because I think like a lot of our audience is male. A lot of the Twit audience is male. But, you know, that is really changing. Like geeky, there was an article in New York Times about how like teenage girls are the biggest web presence right now because it, you know, blogging and MySpace, that kind of thing.
That's a sign of the maturity of the technology. I mean, when it's new and nobody, you know, it's like cars. When they were new, you actually got them with a chauffeur and a mechanic because nobody could figure out how to use them.
Right.
But then, as the technology matures, everybody gets it. It's just part of their lives. And our kids are growing up with it. It's nothing new to them.
Yeah.
Nothing special at all.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's talk about Audible a little bit. Would you like to do that?
I would love to do that. Audible is our sponsor. We love them very much. They do audio books. And if you listen to podcasts during midnight feedings or when you're mowing the lawn or when you're working out in the gym or commuting in the car, then you might want to also try audio books. A great way to expand the range of listening and to really kind of expand your reading. I mean, we all love to read, but who has time nowadays? And I don't know about you, but I get awfully sleepy. I mean, the time I try to read is the time when I'm going to bed, and I get one page a night. Mm. It's not a good way to read for me. So these books are a lifesaver. I've done so much reading through these books. I mentioned the other day I was reading Steve Martin's Born Standing Up, which is a wonderful... He reads it, and it's a wonderful autobiography just of his stand-up years. Kind of ends when he gives up stand-up,
mm-hmm.
which and becomes an actor. But it's he is such a sensitive, neat, insightful person, not a superstar type. He's a real person. It's fascinating to hear his story. Fascinating. Anyway, that's an example of something that I actually get in the car. I'll tell my wife, I'll go get Abby at ballet. Oh, I'll drive carpool just so I can listen. I'm not kidding.
Will you go to the grocery store just so you
can
listen? Oh, good. That's a good technique if you're having trouble getting your spouse to the grocery store.
Just get them hooked on Audible.
Uh-huh.
Audible.com/monkeys. That's the place to go to sign up and get your first book free. Audible.com/monkeys. Somebody sent me a note saying, I don't have anything at audio.com. It's Audible, A-U-D-I-B-L-E.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can hear it. It's Audible. .com. They've been around 10 years and they have grown quite a bit and they now have an incredible range of titles. They play on almost anything, including your computer, on a CD. You can burn them to CD for your car, for instance, and of course, most portable players. And your book pick of the week?
My book pick is the Winnie the Pooh collection.
Oh, I love Winnie the Pooh so much.
And this is great. My grandmother actually gave Milo and Huck this collection in hardcover right before she died. It was, she never even got to give it to them. It was, they sent it to us. It was in her stuff. She had never gotten to send it. And we've been trying to read it, but it's hard to keep their interest in the actual book. But now the audiobook has really solved that.
That's
for us.
Interesting. So you're saying that they'll listen to an audiobook in a way that they won't listen to you read it?
Yes, because if we're in the car is when they listen to it. Sometimes when they're just sitting around playing. But when I've tried to read the book, they sort of squirm out. It's like it doesn't capture them immediately. Yeah. It's long, and there's not as many pictures as your traditional picture book. So it's strange to think that when you go to with absolutely no pictures, but then they can sort of imagine it in their heads, and then when we sit down to read it the next time, then it
goes. I often wonder whether this. For instance, it's clearly for little kids, but it's also somewhat adult feeling. Adults, remember there was a book called The Tao of Winnie the Pooh?
Uh-huh.
I think adults really like
it. Yeah, it is. Yeah, I love Winnie the Pooh.
Now, there's quite a few Winnie the Pooh books here.
Collection, the Winnie the Pooh, it's that top one, I think. The blue, is that?
Classics,
it says?
I'm looking at all this stuff.
Let's see what the link was that I...
There's a 4-volume Winnie the Pooh Classics.
Well, you should, if you're downloading it, you should get, they're usually all 1 credit, so you should.
Well, this
Winnie
is,
the
this
Pooh
is a,
this Classics is, Volume 1.
Volume 1. Let's listen. This is Peter Dennis. I don't know him reading this. From Blackstone Audio.
Blackstone Audiobooks presents from the unabridged collection A.A. Milne's Pooh Classics, The 10 Stories of Winnie the Pooh. Performed by Peter Dennis.
Thank you.
This is the only reading of these immortal stories authorized by A.A. Milne's son, Christopher Robin.
Who wrote... Christopher Robin was his son. Do you think his brother was named Winnie? Actually, Winnie is Winston Churchill, isn't it?
Mm.
I don't know. That really is true. There is a real Christopher Robin.
Yes.
And a real
Winnie the Pooh.
Who was a stuffed animal, obviously. So
it was actually a real bear that lived with him. That was the bizarre thing.
Yeah, it was like amazing. Peter Dennis, it turns out, is the guy for reading Winnie the Pooh. Christopher Robin says, Peter Dennis has made himself Pooh's ambassador extraordinaire, and no bear has ever had a more devoted friend.
Hmm.
He said, this is the guy who should be reading it to you. So that's interesting. That's really interesting.
This is an older
reading. Now I want to hear more. I want to hear him.
We didn't even get to hear it.
Peter Dennis has made himself Pooh's ambassador extraordinary.
I said that, lady.
And no bear has ever had a more devoted friend.
We really need a dress rehearsal for this show.
So if you want to meet the real Pooh, the bear I knew,
then
the bear my father
dressed.
Wrote about, listen to Peter.
I'm wearing underwear.
Winnie the Pooh by A.A. Milne, dedicated to her.
See, he's got that dry
hand
style.
In hand we come, Christopher Robin and I, to lay this book in your lap. Say you're surprised. Say you like it.
Oh, I love it already.
Yeah, he's good.
So you've been listening, mm-hmm. so you knew mm-hmm. what he sounded like. But
mm-hmm.
It's dry. It's exactly how it should be.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't be read like Winnie the Pooh,
right.
like the Disney. It should be dry. It's dry British humor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't heard a bad reading on Audible.
There are some. Okay. I'm not going to say they're perfect. Usually it's the older stuff. What they've gotten very good at, in fact, this is a big change. When I first started listening to Audible, I was a little disappointed because it was mostly the publishers abridged
yeah.
cassettes transferred. And publishers often don't have the best readers.
Right.
And I think Audible knew this. This was years ago. This was 8 years ago. Audible started to acquire readings from some of the better, like recorded books, which does had the best readers. Mm-hmm. They were using Broadway actors. They were, and that's the thing. It has to be an actor.
Right.
Blackstone Audio is another good source. And so they have now built up a library that is better than any other company. I mean, they have everything. And in general, all the readers are spectacular. The only time, sometimes really, the times I don't like the readers is when the author itself. Not always is the author a very good reader.
Yeah.
I'm looking for, but one thing you can do on Audible is you can click on the narrator. You can actually see reviews of the narrator, what are the books he's read, listener reviews.
Huh.
So Audible really gives you the chance not to be burned. And as we've, all we're doing with these previews, there's a preview button on every book.
And they're long, like they can be long.
Yeah. You said the Seuss one went all the way through.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because, when I first started listening to audiobooks or hearing about audiobooks and I thought, well, they're abridged. Well, why do they do that? They must think people won't listen, aren't interested in right. listening to the whole book. It's too long. But it was really the medium because, I mean, people didn't want like 12 cassettes or something. You know, you could, but it was just like, it was so unwieldy. But it's really people want the unabridged version, but they just also want it to be able to carry it around. And now
that's why digital downloads is great.
Right. Because
they'll divide, if a book is really long, they'll divide it. Usually the chunks are never more than, say, 70 or 80 megabytes. I try mm-hmm. to keep it under 100 megabytes per chunk. And I've downloaded books. Bleak House is like 5 chunks or 6 chunks. The Dickens novel. It's very, very long. But that's a lot. I mean, that's many, many hours. Mm-hmm. So I think it's 8 hours, usually about 8 hours of download in the highest quality.
Yeah,
they're not that big. Mm-hmm. And nowadays with big MP3 players, you can get a full unabridged book. And what a joy it is to listen to those.
Right.
And the thing is, I like a longer book because it's more engrossing. You get into it. Mm-hmm. You're drawn in. Yeah. And you don't want it to ever end.
Exactly. Like this show.
Well, you're in luck. The world's longest show. Anyway, audible.com/monkeys. We thank them so much for their support of Jumping Monkeys. We do feel like they're a perfect partner for us. So now we know the Cory Doctorow. Poesy is a beautiful name.
It is, yeah.
You want to tell us about Huck and Milo? Where did they come from? Huck Finn?
Huck Finn, yes. Well, Milo we chose first, and I really just liked the name.
I love
but
Milo.
Then we liked that it was from Catch-22, Milo Minderbinder.
Right.
And later, after we decided, there's also a book with the character Milo and The Phantom Menace?
The Phantom Tollbooth.
Yeah, the Phantom Menace.
Tollbooth.
Then we named him Luke.
No, the Phantom Tollbooth. Milo is one of the most beloved children's book figures.
I have not read that, but I need to. I know.
Oh, you will be in about 2 years.
Yeah, I know.
I'll be old enough. Right. That's a wonderful book.
Yeah. And then Huck, from Huck Finn, we just, Marco loved it, and I had to come around for
Marco's
a while.
Marco's a literature guy.
He is. He, teaches American literature, and at first I thought he would have a hard time on the playground, and Marco was like, no, Huck, nobody messes with a Huck
Huck's
the playground.
Huck's a manly name.
And that turns out at age 3 to already be true, sadly.
Huck's got sharp teeth, kids. Stand back. Don't dare call him anything else. No, any name can be messed up on the playground to the point where they can make fun of you.
Right. Yeah. It has been interesting so far when, friends have started play the name game with Huck,
Huck,
yeah.
Banana, fana, foe.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Well,
you get the picture.
I get the picture. Yes, we
but,
see.
But that's their names. We love them.
Oh, and I love, both those names are great. It's not, and Annabelle is a beautiful name.
Thank you.
Especially because your husband's last name is, well, yours too now, is Maroney. It's a nice Italian linked to it. It's wonderful.
Yes.
We should talk about that sometime.
We should. Yeah.
Choosing
there's
the name
lots
for your
of crazy.
Kid is tough.
Yeah, it is.
Because that's going to be their lifelong label.
Yeah.
And I think people do become their name.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a Bertha.
Yeah.
And with all due respect to anybody named Bertha, but that's a tough name to live up to.
Yeah.
Hilda.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, Leo is such a beautiful name.
Yeah.
I couldn't be anything but beautiful.
There is a story that I, now that I actually have a computer in front of my me, there was some couple that was arrested for the name that they named their child recently.
It was a rude name.
Well, it was, no, it was, I have to find this story. It was like, it was like a bunch of characters on the keyboard. Did you, have you heard this?
Yeah, I saw it somewhere.
Beef, like I saw it on Boing Boing, I think. Yeah. Let me see if I can. I thought I put it on my Tumblr.
But you can't arrest somebody for a bad name. That's like arresting somebody for bad hair.
Okay, here it is. Swedish couple fined for naming their child BRFXX.
That's Sweden. That's a socialist state for you. No, you cannot name him that.
They were fined for failing to register a legally approved name for their 7-year-old child, who is presently called BRFXCCMNPBCC.
Well, they must have a nickname for him.
It's pronounced Albin.
That's a joke. It's spelled, but it's pronounced Chardé.
Yeah.
No, I think that that's kind of a rude thing to do, but I don't think the state has any right to fine you for it.
Yeah, they've offered to change the kid's name to A, but the Swedish government says they won't. That won't do either.
It's funny. I think that there are countries where there are, you have to have state approval for your name. Not in this country.
No.
You can name a kid Hostess Twinkies if you want. You can name him anything you want in this country.
Anything you want. Should we have some listener feedback now?
Yeah. Do we have to?
We have some emails.
Oh, good.
One from David.
Not live listener feedback.
No, okay. Not today.
They're not knocking.
I mean, you could
door.
Speak in David's voice if you want. Do you have a Vermont accent? David in Vermont says, I'm a principal of a preschool to 8th grade school in Vermont. He says, I couldn't stand it when Denise Howell talked about her preschooler having homework and sitting down to do it at a table to do classwork.
Isn't that awful?
This isn't what preschool or kindergarten ought to be like, says
or
David.
Or first grade or second grade or third grade.
He says, we totally underestimate the value of play. Kids need to touch things, feel things, manipulate their real world before we burden them with abstractions like writing letters and numbers. Children who have learned to play, share, and communicate around a box of crayons or a set of blocks are the ones who are ready for the primary grades. I recommend you listen to a podcast by Michael Resnick of MIT where he talks about the value of play in kindergarten and how all learning should be more like kindergarten.
I agree. Couldn't agree more. I don't think, you know, one of the things, I mentioned the Steve Martin book a lot, but one of the things I noticed, Steve Martin did not have any homework in high school. This is in the 60s in Los Angeles.
What?
And as a result, he was able to go to Disneyland every day after high school, work in the magic store there, learn magic tricks, begin his career. Had he been doing homework, who knows?
Right. Good point.
I think that's just to me, it feels a little bit like, now we're going to hear from teachers, and I'd love to, but it feels a little bit like a cop-out where the teachers are saying, well, we can't teach them enough in class. Why don't you take over?
Mm. Well, it's had a lot to do with No Child Left Behind and, you know,
teaching
just
to the test.
Right. All right. Here, this comes from
Ken. Ask Marco. We should get him on the show.
Oh, well, I'll tell you. He doesn't believe in homework. He says our kids are never going to do it unless they want to until they get to high school.
He does. Oh, yeah, right. You're not going to let them do homework.
That's what he says. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see.
Now, he's a high school teacher, so in high school he believes in homework.
Right.
He teaches essay writing.
Well, you know, his homework
makes sense.
Is
you
like
have to go home to write an essay.
Reading and writing. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. This email comes from Ken. He says, quick quiz. A. You ready for this, Leo?
Yep.
My son is starting Pewterspielzel while my daughter is beginning Bassus school. Who is older? My son starting Pewterspielzel or my daughter starting Bassus school?
You giving me any hints at all? Is this a foreign language? Is this a some sort of strange anagram?
Are you saying you don't know the answer? Okay, here's B. If my niece wanted to go to public school, would my brother have to pay?
If my niece wanted to go to public school with my brother... No, because it's public school.
Okay, here's C. What age will my nephew go to college?
What age will my nephew go to college when he's 18? I don't know. What? What did I get wrong there?
A is daughter. His daughter is older. She's beginning Bassus school. B, if my
Does
niece
he explain
wanted to
what Bassus school is? It's just
the point of this, Ken says, is to show this show is international. While everyone in the U.S. may know what the ages children are going into in fifth grade or kindergarten, many in your audience don't. I often listen to the show on my cycle from the train station.
Good point.
I could look these references up, but I probably pose a danger to traffic, not to mention myself.
I understand now what he's saying.
And yeah, he says that we often, you know,
but public school in some countries is actually what
private
we call
school.
Private
right.
school.
Exactly.
Paid school.
Yes. Yeah. And he says, oddly enough, discussions on American politics are very relevant to us and the rest of the world, as so much of the world economy is dictated by the U.S.
See, isn't that funny? Because that's what I would censor out.
Right.
So, okay, from now, I totally apologize.
I do, too. I'm really bad about that.
Well, I have to tell you, this is all very new. Mm-hmm. 30 years I've worked in radio, and never did anybody outside the U.S. hear your show.
Right.
You were lucky if anybody's outside of town heard your show.
Yeah.
And so the idea that podcasting, 25% of our audience is outside the U.S.,
right.
It's hard for us to get used to this idea. And so I do apologize because I know very well. In fact, it's one of the great joys of doing this is that we're heard all over the world by an amazingly various, diverse group of people. And I guess part of it is also, I assume, well, gosh, if they can understand the English, they should understand all of our strange mores. But that's not true either.
Yeah.
So well, I've got to go back to Basa school.
Yeah. So his daughter is older. The question number two, yes, in the UK, public schools are privately owned.
Right.
And C, 13. That's when, yeah, in Ireland, many secondary schools are called colleges.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Now you do.
And so here in the States, your first school is usually preschool, and that's when you could be as young as 3 or 4, mm-hmm. right? Up to about two, even depending on the school.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of informal. That's not a formalized. Your first formal education is in kindergarten. Typically, you would be 6 for kindergarten.
Right.
First grade is 7. I remember all the grades by subtracting 6.
Yeah.
So a 7-year-old is in first grade. An 8-year-old is in second grade. And then that goes through 6th grade. Middle school is typically 6, 7, 8, or sometimes 7, 8, 9, or sometimes just 7, 8. Sometimes junior high school is what that's called. And then high school is usually 10, 11, 12, sometimes 9, 10, 11, 12.
Except for you. You graduated from high school when you were like 12 or something, didn't you?
16. I skipped my senior year. I didn't want to go through all of that. And then, so colleges, you're typically 18 when you go to college. And that's, you know, we don't call those grades anymore.
Right.
Yeah, 12th grade is the last grade we do in the States. But even in Canada, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
And I can never remember.
Yeah.
It's funny how you get so used to what you... Now, this is probably not so much true in the UK or Sweden or countries where they are less provincial than us, but we in the States, we're very provincial. We just assume, oh yeah, sixth grade. Everybody knows
Everybody
sixth grade.
Knows,
I
don't
know what that
mm-hmm.
is. Of course you know what that is. Don't you know what that is?
Yeah. All right. I think that we've borrowed enough of everyone's time at this point, don't you think?
Yes, but we'll give it back in with interest.
We will?
We're only borrowing it.
Right. Think about how much time you're going to save with all the information that we've... given to you.
By the way, if you think we must be doing this show like on the street because you hear all this stuff going by, it's the first spring day of the year. We got the windows thrown wide mm-hmm. open, and I'm not closing those windows for nothing.
Not for nothing.
We are moving the studio. We're going to move it downstairs to a more quiet location.
Mm.
Yes.
Yes.
So, and we'll have a little daycare center in the front if you want to bring the children.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Are you talking to me or the listeners?
Listeners, are you? Well, it's a large daycare center. Yeah. We'll have blocks. We'll have toys. It'll be great fun. Dane is going to take care of the children.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for joining us. We're so glad you were here, and we'll see you next time
on Jumping Monkeys.